A very good evening to you and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from the VOA studios here in Washington. I'm Douglas Impuga. This evening we'll look at the climate change impact in Africa. And with us tonight is my colleague, Vincent Makori, Managing Editor of VOA's Africa 54. Vincent, welcome back to the show.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you very much. And also joining us is regular panelist, Suleiman Mugula. He joins us as usual from Durban, South Africa. He is an independent political analyst. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, gentlemen.
How are you doing today?
Fine. Thank you very much for inviting me.
You're very much welcome. Yeah, and as I said, we're talking about the impact of climate change in Africa. While future effects of climate change are often in the news, climate-related crises are already affecting communities around the world, particularly in Africa. About a few years ago, the El Nino weather cycle led to food shortages caused by drought conditions in large parts of Zimbabwe, Malawi, Zambia, South Africa, and Mozambique. By last year, the climate change-related drought sparked fears of Cape Town becoming the first city in the world to run out of water. Right now, the effects of climate change are already being felt by people across Africa. Let me start here in studio, Vincent. Do people realize the impact of climate change?
You know, the people who experience it probably understand that there's something serious that is happening. They may not understand why these things are getting worse and worse over the years, over the decades. The elite who run these countries obviously are not stupid. They understand that there is a climate change and it is having a devastating impact on their communities, on their countries. But then, as we have seen, there is a tendency to focus on what is more important to them than to their populations, than to their nations, than to their people, in that they do not deliberately address those issues that relate to the impact of climate change. Of course, some of the things are things you cannot change. For example, there are extended droughts that are taking place because of climate change. The question is, how do governments, how do countries mitigate the impact of this? How do you deal, for example, with communities that live in these places where they experience extended droughts? We have pastoral communities, nomadic communities that, you know, rely on keeping, you know, thousands and hundreds of thousands of cattle. And then at the same time, their regions are getting drier and drier and there's no grass. So when the effect is that their cattle die, when rains come once in a while, they sweep away everything, including the lives of people. So this, you know, everybody either knows and understands that there's climate change and the impact it has on the communities. Others who may not understand the lingo, they may not be involved in the discussions about climate change, experience it, because there are those communities that live there. You ask them, they will tell you that things are getting worse. They will explain to you that 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, we used to plant crops here. We used to have grass over there for our cattle, but we don't have that anymore. Something has changed. They may not have the language. They may not have some of those scientific kind of studies to explain to them what all this means, but they know exactly what's happening to them. So it is a very sad affair when you think about it, especially when you think about those who know what's going on and do not do anything to help the communities deal with these changes.
Talking of impact, Suleiman, you recently in Durban, where you are, you had landslides.
Yes. Not only landslides, we have had floods in addition to the drought which you talked about, which nearly led the town running out of water. So these catastrophes are continuing to rage, as recent as said. Maybe the difference in South Africa is that South Africa is a more organized country. The government is more proactive. Once it happens, it puts systems in place. Not only, even if it is an emergency, we have got emergency systems in place. We get people being supported left and right, at least effectively, though we still need to beef up our system. But when you compare them to the continent, I think we are far much ahead. Even the international global climate change catastrophes, we have got institutions like SASO. They are leading, they are heading all efforts to make sure that they plan for the future to get a sustainable energy which can help also to mitigate the climate change problems as we are experiencing in the world. Though relatively, we are not yet affected by those global effects as such due to emissions, but to other factors, the catastrophes, the way Vincent has talked about, the ones we have talked about, the consistent droughts, the desertification, those ones we are, at least with South Africa, we are having contingency plans and proactive, comprehensive planning for them. But compared to the continent, if I may go out of South Africa, I think the continent, as Vincent has said, I think our population on the continent in sub-Saharan Africa are by and large helpless because of the generation of leaders whom we have on the continent. Really, some of these catastrophes which we are getting, they are not new, as the center said. We have had desertification pushing on the continent. We have had the consistent drought. The whole of Africa, I think the whole of last year, the year before, was hit by a terrible drought. So many parts of Kenya were devastated. The arid and semi-arid areas, I think out of the 47 counties, close to 37 counties were affected by drought. So the government knew. This has been happening. It has never happened in Ethiopia. It has happened in all these countries. But when it comes, it shows you that our leaders have not taken care. They don't, as Vincent has said, they are not bothered about the sustainability of the country. Instead, they are more concerned about their own sustainability. So that is the tragedy which we have on the continent.
To what extent, this one is to both of you, are the leadership on the continent a contributing factor to the effects of climate change? Because some of these could be, it seems there's no sense of direction. No?
You see, if I may jump in there first, as I've said many times, and I would be happy if an African leader corrects me on this, in many countries you'll observe that the political leaders actually behave like they're mercenaries in their position to take as much as they can within the shortest time possible, the longest time possible, depending on where they are, and just go and disappear into oblivion, only that they will not be disappearing to any place. Why do I say this? Is because when you look around and look at how they prioritize things, for example, the continent is right now being mortgaged to external powers, China and others. The leaders of Africa are being summoned everywhere, to the east, to the west, to the north, and they're being given a list of things that these nations want to do in their countries. This includes leasing out chunks of land that was supposed to be, it's the heritage of their people, for the Western countries, for Middle Eastern countries, for China, to use in whichever way they choose. And this is in disregard to the devastating effect of the activities of some of these countries on the continent, whether it is agriculture, whether it is the so-called necessary infrastructure. Nobody is looking at all to ask for the input of the citizens who are affected. The political leaders behave like the land belongs to them. It's their personal property, and they can use it whichever way they please. They can give it out. They can lease it out to anybody for any activity. There were so many times, so many issues, for example, in the country of Kenya, where people are moved from places so that companies from Canada, from US, can go and set up titanium extraction plants there. Mm-hmm. Nobody cared about what was lying on the land there, what destruction was going to follow, and how that will affect the livelihoods of the people. And some of these places which were green and forested have been cleared so that the West or some other external forces can benefit from whatever lies in the belly of these countries.
Yes, talking of destruction, there are ample examples on the continent. DR Congo's huge forests are being depleted by outside foreigners. Yeah. Liberia leased out land to international somebody to grow, I don't know what. Ethiopia leased out land, I think, to an Israeli company to push up thousands of people that they can lease out the thing. In Uganda, the current government leased out a big chunk of land where there are thousands of people so that an international investor can come and grow sugarcane. And then, interestingly, prior to the ousting of President Bashir, several Gulf countries made vast agricultural investment in Sudan, grabbing large chunks of land to export food to cash-rich but food-poor Arab investors. The ruling party, of course, was desperate for cash. But the only green and fertile land, they gave out, they sold out. So, Suleiman, with this kind of, backward thinking, what's the way forward for the African man and woman?
That is how desperate, that is how helpless the ordinary man in Africa is. Because those who would have saved them are the ones who are mortgaging them. And then they are being marginalized to the edges of where the land has been, where the environment has been degraded. And even the environmental degradation itself taking place in these countries. The governments or the leadership in Africa, they are looking. Deforestation, it is government supported, whereas they know the effects of deforestation. The swamps have all been cleared. The overgrazing, you find, for example, you are saying in northern Uganda with the refugee influx from southern Sudan, they are almost deforesting the whole area because firewood are the source of energy to be used. So within a short time, you'll be having drought, you'll be having problems of agriculture in that area, which comes naturally because the government is careless. Not only that, they're using deforestation in mountain areas where we have had landslides in Uganda. Those government has done nothing to help, to plan, to mitigate the effects which would come with such environmental degradation. So our own governments on the continent are culpable for what is going on in the continent. Yes, there are some issues which you may not blame them. For example, what has just happened in Mozambique, they may not have done much. But still, there should be prior planning. Once it has happened, we should see emergency measures being taken. There should have been some emergency relief fund put aside in case of problems like this. But you find that we get our governments with pants down when they almost know nothing to do. Then they have nothing to do only other than appealing to outside countries to help. Right now, even Namibia is facing another big drought. Already they are pushing out their hands for help. Mm-hmm. So we have a problem with the generation of leaders whom we have on the continent, I think.
Also, I wanted to say there's this culture of denial, denial for selfish needs. How many times do we see in many African countries when there is drought, people are dying, be it northern Kenya? The leaders are denying that there is drought. The leaders are denying that people are dying, are starving in Turkana. They don't want anybody to visit. In fact, in the history of Kenya, there are times when people died for trying to expose this, including a famous bishop, Bishop Muge. And what does this lead tell you about this? When you do not acknowledge there is a problem and then address it publicly, it means you have really no interest for long-term resolution of that problem. And so when we're talking about drought, we're talking about forest depletion, we need to be open about what's happening in the country and then sit and talk and craft an agenda and determine how to move forward. We know there are several activists on the ground who actually address these issues, even take those issues to international fora, whether it's international climate change summits or even at the UN. But many times governments don't seem to be seriously pursuing the agenda to make sure that they find ways to mitigate the effects and the impact of climate change. And therefore, they kind of appear like they're kind of oblivious of what's going on. As if those things are happening in some kind of distant place or in isolation, they don't have any impact on what they do. But at the end of the day, we're like people in the same house.
That's right. Yeah. And now for those who are just joining us, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from VOA studios here in Washington. Tonight, we're discussing the climate change impact in Africa. Our panelists are my colleague, Vincent Macquarie and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio One in Washington. Suleiman, you just heard Vincent elaborate there how there seems to be lack of care. At least the leaders don't. But then the troubling thing is, according to many analysts, that climate change can impact national security of these countries. Because as people are chased off their land, they are jobless, there's high rates of joblessness on the continent. Africa is a very young continent with so many young people with nothing to do. This leads to insecurity and all that. So it's sort of a vicious circle. So it goes because people are jobless, they are insecure, they have nothing to feed themselves on. Why are they not concerned that this may affect them in the long run?
You see, one of the cancers which you have got on the continent is this habit which grew on the continent where the leaders have relegated their responsibility to the NGOs. Now, because of the influx of NGOs in Africa, many of these leaders take a back seat and relax while NGOs are running around trying to help. They forget that the primary responsibility of looking after a country is the leadership of these particular countries. Number two, remember very well that many of these African countries are still fragile states. They are not stable as such. So their preoccupation, as you said, their budget's more. Many of them are spending many of their budgets in security. Yet, as you are saying, the climate change is a source of insecurity because, as you said, apart from the fact that people are unstable, there is movement of people. Once people don't have shortage of water, you get them moving. Apart from that, you get conflicts as a result of fighting over scarce resources. You have had conflicts in DRC, you have had conflicts in Karamoja, in Uganda. Luckily enough, we didn't have those in Kenya. But in all these areas, you find eventually there are conflicts which become another problem of security in this particular country. So none of these things, as Vincent has said, they need a transparent government. They need inclusiveness, where you need a country to sit within itself and sort out such problem, to see how they face problems transparently instead of hiding these problems. As Vincent has said, it is not only in Kenya where leaders have kept a secret about the problems facing their countries, like the drought. Even in countries like Uganda, Uganda has had the droughts where people were dying in some districts, and government was covering it as if there was nothing going on. Some opposition political leaders even went ahead to fundraise food and take these districts. Government even grabbed the very food which was being raised by opposition leaders. So we don't even know what is on minds of these lunatic leaders whom we have on this continent, this generation of leaders who are not bothered, who are only interested about themselves.
Why then, I'm still puzzled, and I've been reading a lot of reports on this. The evidence is there. Kilimanjaro's glaciers are melting, and nobody seems to be bothered. Rivers are drying. And as Suleiman points out there on the issue of national security, take for instance the River Nile.
Yes.
The countries upstream and downstream, there'll be tug of wars who takes how much water. Mm-hmm. And nobody seems to be bothered at all.
Well, I don't know why you're surprised, Douglas, but my perception of after many years of observation across the continent is that a great number of African leaders behave like the country will not exist after they're gone. Mm. They don't bother about what will happen tomorrow. And therefore, you don't hear a vigorous discourse about our 10-year, 15-year, 30, 50-year projection of what our country should look like. And that is why you look around, for example, urban areas. I'll give you an example, and I fall back to Nairobi or Kenya because I'm more familiar with it, but I've also traveled. Mm. Why do you find African cities suddenly looking extremely crowded and so confused?
Yes.
As if in the year, say, 1970, we did not project that we'll have five times the population that was at that time in the city of Nairobi. And therefore, we'll need this amount of roads. Mm. Therefore, we'll need this amount of schools and parking spaces.
Open spaces, yes.
Why is it that just 30 years later, 40 years later, we're so surprised at how crammed we are in a small place, and yet, if we had thought ahead, we could have planned for these things. Mm. We could have projected. When did you hear any serious discussion and implementation of any plan that looks into how our countries should transform with the time with the increasing population? You don't see that. Yeah. Why? Because the leaders are more concerned about how they can amass wealth, how they can have as much power as possible to facilitate the achievement of their short-term goals. Mm. It is the same reason that we are mortgaging the continent to China. And if you question these politicians about what their concerns are about the future of these loans to the citizens of Africa, the children and their grandchildren, they're not bothered.
They're
because
not.
To them, they really don't care what happens after that. They're concerned about what serves their best interest today. So for me, that is the bane of Africa. There has not been forward-looking, deliberate planning. All countries, I've lived in this United States for at least 17 or more years, maybe 18. Every road that I've used since I came here has been in constant expansion. Mm. There's been some extensions, some new bridges. So why? Because you have to continue improving and planning for the future of a country. Mm. Whether it is climate change, whether it is infrastructure, whether it is just general well-being and welfare of the people, you have to think not about today, not about when you're in power, but think 20 years, 30 years, even 50 years from now.
Now, that's right. And another interesting thing that I've pointed out is that the governments are not doing anything to mitigate these factors. I was reading a story just the other day, a small kingdom in Uganda called the Kingdom of Toro. The king organized his people to go and plant several thousands of hundreds of trees. Governments don't think of those lines. They don't care. They just cut and that's the end of it.
Yeah.
They don't think of putting back what they're destroying or trying to mitigate or at least reduce the impact. So, as Wissen says, it seems the perception is that, after all, by the time we are still there, we'll enjoy what happens tomorrow is not a business. Is that the view?
Just even ask yourself, Douglas, does a country like Uganda, Tanzania, or Rwanda, do they have food reserves? Have they ever said that a drought can sweep through the whole country, or they wait when it happens to be like Ethiopia, to start waiting to go and get contracts in Britain to get food for them?
Yeah.
Haven't they seen it? Do we have water reservoirs? Do we have any sustainable energy program in many of these countries? The countries in the Sahel, don't they know? Are they not faced with these countries? But have they been able to build boreholes? Have they been able to make at least any emergency problems, any emergency programs in case it becomes severe than what it is? So it just boggles one's mind.
And
why these people sit in these state houses doing what when the countries are at risk?
And actually, I want to continue, extend on what Hula has just said. Look, if you take the examples of countries that have very dry areas or areas that are prone to extended drought, most of the times, like in northern Kenya, northern Uganda, you find that the communities there are pastoralists. These are people who keep cattle. So whether you're talking about the Karamoja, you're talking about the Turkana, you're talking about the Samburu, the Maasais, these people keep thousands, hundreds of thousands of cows. Now, the reality is that they live in a place where half of the year there's going to be so much drought that there won't be grass for their cattle. Now, we have lived in this space for years. Governments know very well drought is coming. Why should we appear to be so surprised by this extreme extended drought and the death of thousands of cows, and therefore being the livelihoods of these people? Of course, they have no source of food, no milk, nothing. Where is the planning? Why haven't we taken the best practices from other countries and find out how do countries that are developed deal with areas where people just keep cattle? Because there's a way you can plan. You know very well there's going to be a drought. How about building, for example, meat processing plants in those areas so that you can take cows from these pastoralists, give them money they can keep in a bank and buy food from the areas of the country where they grow food. But make sure that before the drought comes, we can take all these cows, slaughter them, package them, send them to the wealthy urban areas, send them, export them abroad, and help these people to understand that you can invest in your cows by selling them off, keep this money in the bank. When the drought comes, we'll ship food from other areas. You can buy them the food because you have the cash. But for all these people, their cattle is their wealth. And when the drought comes and they're decimated, they're left with nothing. But we are surprised. We look like we're so surprised. First in denial and then surprised. Where is the planning? Where was the discussion about how we shall secure the people who live in the drought-prone areas? If we don't have that kind of a conversation, that tells you that those leaders of those countries have no plan for the future of a country. They're focused on today and on themselves.
Suleiman, the last 30 seconds, summary in the last 30 seconds, is there any hope of turning things around?
I think the bottom line is leadership. The bottom line is leadership 100 times, because as this center said, living in arid areas, semi-arid areas in northern Kenya, northern Uganda, it's just like in here in South Africa, we have got winters. But during winter, the farmers know how to take care of these animals. They know how to preserve the grass. In dry seasons, they know how to make water reservoirs. As this has said, how can a government be there 20 years, 30 years, without knowing how to secure a whole 37 counties out of 47 counties in Kenya or Uganda? How can you say about four districts out of 100, and you cannot secure them during the critical time? So the bottom line is that we have to have a new generation of leadership on the continent, which will be proactive, which will be innovative, which will be caring, unlike the predatory generation which we have. I think this one has to do with the new system. It depends on the youth to wake up and throw them out.
He doesn't look good, obviously, I think we're out of time. One word, maybe?
Yeah, one word is that it's the governments and leaders should never see this kind of conversation as being anti-government. They should see this as the most progressive ideas they can get. Think ahead.
I wish they would listen to this. Well, that wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thanks to my colleague, Vincent Macquarie, a managing editor for VOA's Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. Our producer, as usual, was Jackson Mufunganyi, and our engineer tonight was Vasco Valarish. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website at www.voanews.com, click on Programs, and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, in Washington, wishing you all the best.